hanging at the Rampart Race and Sports Book. It's Cofield and Company. With Steve Cofield on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go. On a Wednesday, back here at the Rampart Race and Sportsbook, Steve Cofield, Cofield and Company on the scene. We'll tell you all about the cool goings-on here on Monday and Thursday and Saturday and Sunday for football season. We're going to be joined a little later on by our legal insider, Justin Watkins. Crowded show today. Obviously, crazy stuff going on in the world of sports. John Von Tobel is here. Adam Hill is alongside as well. Ari, let's do it.
It's time for the three. Presented by Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call him today at 577-2600.
So we start. John Von Tobel wants to get into 9/11. You want to be all depressing today? What's wrong with you?
Oh, come on. You make me feel like a jerk for bringing this up.
No, it's important to bring it up. Obviously, I have an interest in speaking about it as a New Jersey, New York native.
Well, and that's why
that wasn't the only area hit. Mm-hmm. And as I think you're going to point out, my God, it doesn't seem that long ago, but a lot of time has passed.
Yeah, it's been 18 years now, I think. Now this is 18th year that has passed since it happened. And for me, I don't know, like, I was in fifth grade. I was 10. So for me, when this happened, it was really, like, the word is terrifying. Like, I was absolutely terrified of what happened. It was the first time before my grandfather passed that I'd seen my father cry in front of me. So it was a really weird and just really scary experience. But it's insane to me because it almost feels like it happened, like you said, 1, 2, 3 years ago. But I was in fifth grade. And now all of a sudden I'm 28, I have a kid, and, you know, obviously he'll grow up to learn about history and what happened, but he has no idea. It's just, it is nuts to me how much time has fly. But I do get, I will be honest, I get relatively, it's like kind of sad on this day. And I don't really know why. I don't know anybody who was directly affected by it. Yeah. I was just around and I was young, and it scared me to the point where, you know, when I had to take a trip a couple months later, I was terrified to go on a flight. But on this day, I just kind of get sad. I read the article every single year about the falling man, I think is what it's called, about the picture of the guy, you know, jumping out of the tower. So, obviously, it's a sad day. It's just crazy that such a long time has passed.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird how everybody has different memories depending on how old they were, too. I was reading a story today, actually, about people that are, like, 20, 21 years old who think how young they are, but they don't really know that it's an event from history for them, mm-hmm. which is insane to think about. But I also have weird feelings too. Of I saw people come.
Adam, I'll break in for a second just to put it in perspective. You were born in what?
79.
All right.
I was in college. I was actually the sports editor of the UNLV paper, and I wrote a column about it.
Okay, but a good example for like you age wise, the hostages in Iran.
Yeah.
Like for you, that was it's nothing.
No, I mean, well, it's I've read
pure history,
about it.
But you were like, you know, 1 year old,
yeah,
2 years old.
I wasn't even one.
And you know? I have no idea.
For me, like, I don't know, the Kent State shooting, you know, if you were going to the early 70s.
Well, you were in college, so it kind of affected you in a weird way.
Obviously, I wasn't around for 1968. I was born after that. But, you know, I can read about a horrible year that 1968 was with assassinations. For you, yeah, you were basically college aged on 9/11. So your experience is totally different than mine, and obviously my experience is different than both of you guys since I'm, you know, from the area that was affected the most.
Yeah, South Florida. But I think...
Jokes and more jokes.
I was very interested today in just how we commemorate it, how we think about it, because somebody was angry on Twitter, which somebody's angry on Twitter every day about something.
Was there someone angry on Twitter?
Angry at Google today.
Why?
Because, you know, if you guys use Google... You'll see throughout the year, every day they change the way the search is set up.
I use Bing.
A lot of people use Google. Google's kind of popular. You should check it out. They change the search every day. It's like it's Thomas Edison's birthday, so it's a light bulb. Or like they do something. And they didn't do anything today. I mean, it was just Google. It was just there was no commemoration. There was no anything. And I thought about it, and I said, really? What do you want them to put up there? Like, what do you want them to do? Because... whatever they do, people are going to they'll be like, oh, this isn't the proper way to do it. Mm-hmm. I don't like how this is all you do? This is it? The same as every other day? Like, what are they going to do that's going to make people happy? Nothing. So I think their solution was, you know what? It's an awful day. People can remember it how they want to. and commemorate it how they want to, and you know, reflect on the awful day that it was. But they're not going to make anybody happy.
Right.
But now you're going to be mad because they didn't do anything. Like companies can't win in this kind of situation. So I think that's a weird dynamic of this day. We're not far enough away for it to be, you know, anything. I've heard, you know, comedians say at some point it's going to be like a ride at an amusement park, and people will be like, oh, it's a 9/11 ride. And it will be. And like people right now.
I don't think it will.
Oh, it will. Oh, it will. 100% it will.
No.
Yeah. It definitely will.
Never.
What
other?
The Titanic is a ride?
Well, I don't think that is anywhere near the same.
It was a lot of people dying. I guarantee you in the first 10 years of the Titanic, people were like, that's an awful day. Nobody will ever have
that. I hadn't thought of the Titanic. Yeah. That is pretty sick.
Yeah, it's a ride.
When you think about it, it was a real life event, not a movie.
Right. And so, I mean, everything eventually with time becomes, you know, a holiday or in some way is remembered.
Well, this should be a holiday.
Yeah, but again,
it should be just because it's not term. Just because it's not a Monday.
Yeah.
Dude, there's holidays for World War
II. I get that. That's what I'm saying. It's regardless of those events, it's still a weird term to.
Right, but it's because it's fresh in your mind, and you think about it. Eventually, that's what it's going to be.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's an awful, awful thing, but it's also like everybody has to think about it and reflect on it in their own personal way, because nobody's ever going to be happy with how you handle it. I mean, there was a TV show that did jokes about 9/11. I mean, Curb Your Enthusiasm is one of the funniest shows of all time. They had an episode kind of making jokes about it, not about the tragedy, but about, you know, somebody had claimed, oh, I lost a friend on 9/11. Like, oh, that's awful. Like, yeah, they died in an accident uptown, but it wasn't, you know, it was still on 9/11. Like, that's a joke about 9/11. I thought it was funny, but I'm sure people are like, how could you make light about that? Eventually, everything comes around to that. It's awful, and it's a terrible, awful situation. But everybody has their own timeline. Everybody has their own remembrance. Everyone has their own way of reflecting on things. So you're never going to make people happy. So as you say, oh, it's weird to say it's a holiday. It'd be weird to say Pearl Harbor Day is going to be a holiday. But it is. Like, everything is an awful... You know, everything awful eventually, with time, becomes something different.
Is that the day in your lifetime, Adam Hill, 9/11, where you can absolutely remember where you were when you first found out what was going on?
Yeah, and I don't know that I've told the story in the air, but I was actually roommates with Gooch at the time. This is far before either
Gooch
one of us was in radio.
Over on Comp.
Yeah. Before either one of us was in radio, and we were roommates, and he was working a graveyard shift at a bar. He knocked down my door in my bedroom and was like, you got to turn on TV. And I turned on the TV, and I looked, and I said, you're an idiot. That's a movie. And
really?
I tried to go back to sleep, yeah. And... Yeah, and I mean, I was sleeping. I had no idea I was sleeping. Yeah, and then
seven
I woke
in the
up.
Morning, really, yeah. A little bit earlier, yeah. Actually. I was at the dentist. I was on my way to the dentist, and I was listening to Howard Stern. So, you know, as a radio guy, that was the first news I got of it, and obviously they were horrified. They're doing play-by-play of just something just completely disgusting. And
yeah, I remember my you know favorite radio show of all time that I loved was Opie and Anthony, and they did a show that day that was, I mean... very poignant, very, you know, serious, and they were trying to bring news, but I mean they did it in their own way, obviously, but you know, I remember listening to them and how they handled it, and it was kind of like a thought of like how news, you know, how entertainment people are supposed to try to deal with those sorts of things.
Yeah, I would say almost 20 years later, the things I would suggest reflecting on, you do whatever you want, obviously.
Yeah.
What I would reflect on is how much we appreciated first responders, and obviously we got the feel of that a couple of years ago now with 1 October in Vegas. And not only first responders, the other thing that came out of it for weeks and weeks and weeks, you know, amongst the first responders, the police were just exalted. Law enforcement was loved and appreciated.
For like 3 weeks.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And there were flags all over cars, and, you know, everyone was all fired up, and then it just kind of dissipates.
It always does.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the same thing that, and I don't know, John was very young. I'm not sure how much you remember, but I mean, it was, everybody was so American for two weeks.
My mom bought the clip-on flags for the back window. Like, my mom, who I've never seen be patriotic, you know, not that she hates America, but, you know, she's never been one to hang the flag or do anything like that. We bought the little clip-on flag for the back window, rolled it up, so it sat there the whole time.
It's actually a good point. You know, put aside the everyone was American, everyone was bonded. So,
yeah.
And obviously, things right now, people are not very bonded. So,
well, and we saw this a couple months ago. Like, what I thought was really cool was the whole thing with John Stewart and getting the fund you know, actually extended for decades now on end for a lot of the first responders, too. So that was one of the cool things you've seen in the last few months that ties into today as well. I thought John Stewart did a great job with a lot of the first responders as well.
Yeah, one of the thoughts I always mention is that the two hometowns, for me, like the towns that I kind of grew up around, were two of the hardest hit, if not the hardest hit, in terms of deaths. Mm-hmm. Now, you think about it, I grew up about 35 miles from New York, but that's the life of the New Jersey, New York, sort of Connecticut area. There are tons of people who every day would, you know, take the train or the bus in. That's their life. So that always hit me where it's like, man, not only did, you know, they perish, but like 90 minutes to 2 hours of every workday was spent going up there and coming back, right? Mm-hmm. And it was upwards of like 70 plus people in the two towns were in the towers and passed away. So it's always, like I said, it's always something that hit me because, I mean, so much of your life is, that's why I, you know, I appreciate living in Vegas. We're still a small town and it's relatively easy to get to work. Man, in a lot of these big cities, it's just got to be, you really, it's sobering how much time you just spend going back and forth to work. And I would call it wasting time going mm-hmm. back and forth to work. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
All right, 9/11. So, a little reflection. I don't know if it's the most poignant reflection, but those are our thoughts on it. As we're here in 2019, we're hanging out at the Rampart Casino in the Sportsbook. We got a lot of cool things to tell you about with the Sportsbook. Across the way now from our vantage point, this was under construction about 3 weeks ago. Now we got a brand new buffet here. It's Rampart's 20th anniversary, so they're redoing the joint, adding a lot of new elements to the place. So there's a lot of craziness right now with the Raiders and Raiders related. Before we get to Antonio Brown and the charges and what's going to happen legally and the Patriots side of it, we have to get the news out there, get the reaction and what you know, Adam Hill, about injuries with the Raiders. You know, we saw I think it was Josina Anderson was the first thing I saw up on social media a little bit after the show. It's like, hey, Jonathan Abram, you know, there's something pretty serious here in terms of injury. And then we find out a couple hours later, what's the injury? And that's it. He's done for the year.
Torn labrum, torn rotator cuff. Oh, we'll have surgery. I saw, you know, initial reports likely out for the year. They think he might be out for the year. It depends on recovery. My best information is that they are going to put him on IR and they expect him to be out for the year. I know people were coming at me last night with the, I just read on WebMD it's 6 to 8 weeks. Like, okay. Like, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know that that's the best determination for exactly how long a guy's going to be out. The internet ruins everything by making people think they're an expert on everything. But yeah, it looks like he is likely out for the year. Is there a chance he could recover and that they could designate him to come back for the last couple weeks? Maybe, but my thought is that his season is over, which is horrific. He was clearly establishing himself as a leader. He had a really good game for the most part on Monday. I think there was a couple of mistakes that he made, some over pursuits, maybe some plays where he's too aggressive, but for the most part, I think he was really making an impact on the defense, not only on the field, but off the field. Huge loss for the Raiders in a guy who, you know, was certainly a breakout star for that team. A lot of people were kind of embracing.
So what does it mean from a roster standpoint? Who steps in? Because not only is Abrams out, but you're dealing with an injury with Garen Conley at corner.
Yeah, and he's going to be okay. Looks like he is going to be back at some point. I know Trayvon Mullen stepped in at corner last week and was really targeted, really had a tough time out there. You know, guys like Keyshawn Nixon are going to be able to, you know, try to play a bigger role. And I know they want to get LaMarcus Joyner on the field a lot more, nickelback who can play a little safety as well. So I think they're going to be guys that are involved. But there's a lot to figure out in terms of how they want to line up. And I think it's not going to be necessarily about position. It's going to be about getting the best 11 guys out on the field in whatever way they can and kind of mixing and matching a little bit. And, you know, like we said, it was a different defense after Conley was out of the game the other day. It's certainly going to be a different defense without Abram, who played the vast majority of snaps on Monday night. So I think they got a lot of stuff to figure out this week because it's not a very good game to try to figure out your defense when you got to go against the Chiefs.
NFL is back tomorrow here at Rampart Racing Sportsbook. The Buccaneers are taking on the Panthers. Thursdays, Mondays, Saturdays, Sundays, great specials. You got $2 on beers. You got $2.50 on the bottles. You got food specials like dollar chips, $2 pretzels, $1.25 hot dogs. This is a great spot to watch NFL all week long. And they're back tomorrow with another Thursday night game, the Bucs and the Panthers. When we turn the page, we are going to get to the very serious issue of Antonio Brown and the allegations that came out yesterday, sexual assault and rape. He said, she said case, and Adam Hill will have all the details.
The Three is brought to you by Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call today at 577-2600 to receive a $500 coupon towards your appraisal or any purchase or refinance. Dial up Dustin now. 577-2600. Now, back to the Rampart Race and Sportsbook. It's Cofield and Company.
Out here in Summerlin on a Wednesday, JVT is here, John Von Tobel, Adam Hill, Steve Cofield, Ari's back on the board in our Finley Toyota studios. All right, Adam. So, I feel like I come in to the show and do this a lot. Hey, it's been 18 hours since the AB news broke. Where are we at? This one's really serious. This is not feet and battling over a helmet or trying to attack Mike Mayock. We're talking sexual assault and rape allegations.
So Antonio Brown was sued in federal court yesterday in Florida for three instances of sexual assault and rape against a woman who was serving as his personal trainer, someone who he met in college. She was on the gymnastics team at Central Michigan at the time. They have two different stories about how they reunited and came back into each other's life. But they did come back into each other's life about 2 years ago, and she eventually started serving as his personal trainer. Again, she was a world-class gymnast. So she was training him. According to her, he sexually assaulted her on three different occasions, which were stepping up in severity. She went back to him after both of the first instances, and eventually he forcefully raped her in 2018, according to the lawsuit. Now, he says it's about money. The reason they came, that she came back into his life is after he signed a big deal with Pittsburgh a couple years ago. She hit him up, asked for $1.6 million for her business. He said no, but eventually they started dating, and now this is a money grab now that he is getting more money from the Patriots, and that would explain the timing of the lawsuit. He also says he is going to countersue, which often we say, why don't people countersue in these instances? And I think there's several reasons why. But he says he's going to countersue, not only for himself, but for everybody else that is falsely accused in these situations. There are some details that have come out. One, there's a lot of direct messages circulating yesterday on the internet. I don't know I haven't confirmed them. I don't know if they're actually real. I don't know if somebody made them up and posted them. I don't know. We don't have any documentation on how real they are about Antonio Brown and somebody else discussing how this woman is making up lies and trying to extort him. We also have emails that were allegedly sent from Antonio Brown to the accuser. I think that they back up both of their stories. So this is going to be a very interesting story to play out. I'm sure we're going to hear all the sordid, lurid details as everything comes to light and everything goes forward, unless there's a settlement out of court that this doesn't happen. But so far, the Patriots put out a statement, said, we're aware, we're letting the process play out, we'll see how this all turns out in the end. But the Patriots have dealt with this before. I mean, they've brought in guys that were under investigation or having issues. I don't think they knew anything about this. I don't think the Raiders knew anything about it.
You don't?
I don't.
You guys both believe that? You don't think? John, you think the Patriots had no idea? I'll say this. I think there was some chatter about it about 10 days ago on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
So,
really?
I don't know. I don't believe the Patriots are naive in all of these cases. I don't believe the NFL is naive in all of these cases.
I just feel like the money that he got tells me that they didn't know.
Yeah, $9 million guaranteed.
Now, they could void it for character thing, whatever. But to me, I think they would have gone to him and said, hey, we know what's coming. Like, you're not getting $9 million from us. We know what's about to happen in 2 days when this lawsuit comes out. That's the one thing that, I don't think it would have scared him off. I'm not saying the Patriots wouldn't have taken him on. The Patriots have a history of still taking on guys that have these kind of situations, of dealing with them, of everything else.
They have a history of harboring guys who have issues.
Of course, absolutely.
And potentially enabling guys who have issues.
Yeah. So I don't think it would have stopped them from signing him, but I don't think they would have given him the deal they did if they knew.
Yeah, and for me, that's where, going forward with this, and we'll see how it plays out for Antonio Brown, but, when I look at the Patriots, because of your history of harboring guys, enabling guys, how you handle this going forward is what I want to see. because I don't think you can get the whole cute, like, we'll talk about it later, it's on to Cincinnati or whatever it is. Like, at some point now, because of your past with guys of poor character and guys who have murdered somebody, you have to be able to handle this properly if you're New England.
It's time to hit What's Trending, brought to you by the Golden Nugget Las Vegas.
You heard it. What's Trending? UNLV set to take on Northwestern in Evanston, Illinois on Saturday. Freshman running back Courtney Reese is out for the game. Starting tight end Giovanni Faolo is battling a lower leg injury. He is expected to play. More news on the Rebels coming out tonight, 6 o'clock, right here on ESPN Las Vegas, the Tony Sanchez Radio Show, live from Parkway Tavern on Flamingo near the 215.
You're listening to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, it's our first week at, or look at week three for college football. JBT is here. Of course, you can hear him on VSIN. 10 o'clock, 9:20 the game. Every night, Monday to Friday, Adam Hill, Steve Cofield. Here is the Rampart. We're right in the comforts of the RaceSense Sportsbook. Aaron Torres does a great job of covering college football, college basketball, does shows nationally for Fox Sports Radio, gives us a couple of minutes here on a Wednesday. Aaron, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, Steve. How we doing today, man?
We're good, man. Let's start firing on impressions from the first couple of weeks, especially last week, and a quick look ahead. First of all, where are you on Michigan after the struggles against Army?
Yeah, I mean, my personal opinion is, look, you know, Army, we all know the triple option, the option offense, tough to prepare for, whatever. I'm not worried about Michigan because they struggled against Army. I'm worried about Michigan because their offense is an abject disaster. There's no other way to put it. I heard this stat the other day, guys. They lost 3 fumbles all of last season. They've lost 5 in 2 games this season, and it's just amazing to me to see Jim Harbaugh, no matter what you think of him, but old school, smash mouth, I want to hit you, run between the tackles, Jim Harbaugh. They couldn't pick up a first down on 3rd-and-1, 4th-and-1 last week because they're out of the shotgun trying to do all this cute spread stuff. And so, to me, I don't think it gets better because I don't think they really know who they are at this point. Harbaugh felt like he had to kind of modernize the offense, but they're not good in this new offense. And what they used to do well, line up between the tackles and pick up tough yards, they're not good either. I just don't know how it gets better, especially in a good Big Ten where things pick up quite a bit, especially next week at Wisconsin.
So let's go to the SEC then, because general thought for this show was that Tennessee after week one was going to be fine. It's 1 week. It's one football game. You can bounce back from this. And then you collapse against BYU. How bad is this for Pruitt and the Volunteers?
It's so fascinating, guys. You know, I mean, I know a lot of guys down there at Tennessee. I'm sure you guys do, too. I think the biggest problem is I just think losing is so institutional at that point in terms of the fans expect the worst. I think the players expect the worst. And if you look at the schedule, like, I just don't think it's getting any better. They, in the next, what do they got? So they're 0-2 right now. 1-6 is in play, and that's assuming they beat Tennessee Chattanooga this week, because next week they got Florida, they got Georgia coming up, they got Alabama coming up, and so it isn't realistic for them to think that they're going to start 1-6. The back end of the schedule is a little bit easier, but how kind of mentally and physically beat up are they going to be by that time of the season? So to me, it's just amazing to see. I mean, I think we're all about the same age. I remember a day when Tennessee, Peyton Manning, C. Martin, it was the program in the SEC. It's just amazing to see how bad they've gotten and for how prolonged it's been. It's just incredible to watch.
So we talk a lot about, you know, first-year coaches and how long it takes to get established and, you know, put your system in play. But we've got a couple of second-year coaches that are struggling a bit. So who is in the worst shape right now between a list like Chip Kelly, Chad Morris, like Pruitt, Taggart, those kind of guys that are in a second year, who's in the worst shape?
Yeah, it's funny. I'm writing about this right now. I mean, you know, worst shape is all relative to what you consider worst. I mean, I think, like, the worst situation is probably Chad Morris at Arkansas. I mean, they're just not very talented, but he's probably got more of a leash than Jeremy Pruitt does. He's probably got more of a leash than Willie Taggart does. I'm just amazed at how bad some of these guys have been. I mean, in general, I thought they were all pretty decent hires. Willie Taggart, it's easy to forget now. I mean, we probably know it a little bit better nationally than they do nationally because we live on the West Coast. But, you know, Oregon doubled its win total when he was there in 1 year. He's had success everywhere he's been, and he's a disaster at Florida State. Chip Kelly, Chip Kelly went 46-7 in 4 years at Oregon. Four Pac-10, Pac-12 titles, four BCS bowl games. I can't believe how bad he is. I would say that the least talented team is Chad Morris. The angriest fan base is probably either Florida State or Tennessee. The most mind-boggling one is probably Chip Kelly. I'll tell you what, guys, I thought a lot of different things over these last couple of years. I never thought I'd see a Chip Kelly team look just as bad as this team has done over the last year and a half.
Talking college football, week three on the way, a little more looking back. Let's continue on the UCLA theme. So does that San Diego State win mean very little because of how bad the Bruins appear to be?
I mean, I think to me it does because, you know, San Diego State, I mean, it's not like they were world beaters in week one. I mean, it's one thing if a team just looks really good against, you know, whoever they're playing. And, you know, like Boise. Like, Boise's a good team. Like, that, you know, it is what it is. Like, Florida State lost to them. It sucks. They blew a big second-half lead. But they look like a good team on paper. San Diego State beat Weber State 6-0 in week one. Thankfully, as best I know, it wasn't on TV, and I'm glad it wasn't because that would have been tough to watch. But, I don't think San Diego State is that good this year, and so I do think it's reflective of where UCLA is, that they went to the Rose Bowl, and that game was basically non-competitive. I mean, I think UCLA scored the first touchdown, and San Diego State ripped off about 23 straight points or something, and it was never really close. So listen, I think there's good football being played in the Mountain West. Like, I just don't necessarily think that San Diego State beating UCLA is the best example to use of, you know, Mountain West football looking really good right now.
Yeah, I'm covering the NFL now, so I'm not able to be as into college football as I have in the past necessarily, but I am obsessed with the Texas air conditioning story. I can't get enough of this. Like, this is the kind of stuff I'm here for in college football.
Yeah, you know, honestly, I really haven't looked all that much into it, but it is like the most college football story ever, right? Like, you know, it turned into a he said, she said, and LSU, and then Tom Herman's complaining about the horns down stuff. Like, I'll be perfectly honest, I just haven't had a ton of time to look into it. If you want to educate me, I'm sure you guys have already educated your audience over the last couple days. I really just don't know that much about it, but it sounds like the most cliche college football, like, weird beast that, like, over nothing story. But like I said, I really don't know all that much about it, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, the claim was from the LSU side that Texas didn't have AC in the locker room. There's something about towels, which kind of plays to, you know, we've referenced the reference to Herman as Tom Vermin from some other people. So I guess he could be playing dirty pool. I don't know if Edo is, you know, crying in this case. They won the game, so I don't know what they'd have to cry over. Let's talk about Edo and LSU. First of all, how good is Burrow's a quarterback? Can he be legitimately in the Heisman race? And how good do you think LSU is?
Yeah, it's interesting, you know. I don't know how good Texas's defense is just in the bigger picture, and it pains me. You know, Todd Orlando is their defensive coordinator. He was at my alma mater, UConn, when I was there. And actually, when UConn had that one good year where they went to the Fiesta Bowl, he was their defensive coordinator. So I liked the guy. I wanted him to be good. I don't know how good Texas's defense is. I thought it was obviously a totally positive sign when you throw for almost 500 yards and four touchdowns. That's not to take away anything from him, but is he being Joe Burrow, going to be able to continue to kind of do that over the course of a 12-game schedule, obviously playing not just Bama, but, I mean, Texas A&M's got a really good defense. Auburn plays really good defense. Florida plays really good defense, et cetera. I'm not quite sold on the Joe Burrow hype yet, but I will say this is that if you believe the SEC can get more than one team into the college football playoff, and I do because the last 2 years they almost have. 2 years ago they did. I think LSU's in as good a position as anybody because most of their big games are at home. And I think if they were to run the table with a win over Texas at Texas on their schedule and they were to beat everybody else, like, I think they'd be in the playoff picture. So I'm not 1,000% sold that this is like, you know, the 2008 Patriots offense and they're going to put up like 60 points every week or anything like that. but things do shake out reasonably well, you know, that they could look good and play, I don't know, I mean, play meaningful football in late November, early December, potentially get themselves in the playoff mix. And by the way, I hope they do, because, you know, we have the same teams in the playoff every year. It'd be nice to get Ed Orgeron in there, shake things up a little bit.
It's the voice of Aaron Torres, Fox Sports Radio, on Twitter, at Aaron_Torres. All right, about 2 minutes here. Let's go rapid fire, hit five games if we can. First of all, what do you do with Mississippi State this week? Laying a pretty healthy number. I don't know what's going on at quarterback against Kansas State.
Well, Kansas State, new coach, doesn't play anybody, hasn't played anybody, excuse me. That one, to me, just feels like stay away. Joe Moorhead, I've been pretty underwhelmed by in his year and change at Mississippi State. Supposed to be an offensive genius. I don't buy him. That one, to me, just feels like a stay away. I think Mississippi State probably wins. I don't feel great about the points, though.
I want to take Stanford +8 against Central Florida.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a little bit of overreaction on what happened at USC last week, and I understand why. I don't think this is like a historically great Stanford team, but it was weird for me to see, you know, whatever the number is, 7, 7.5, 8, whatever you're getting it at, that Stanford's that big of a dog against UCF. I'm with you. I take Stanford in the points, even though the game is in Florida.
How about Slovis and the electric USC offense on the road laying 4 against BYU?
The number seems to be coming down every time I look at it. You know, I don't know what to say other than I will say that USC win the other night was one of the most surprising results, not just because they won, but how it happened. I'm not buying it. It's going to be a tough road environment. It's different playing at home from playing on the road in Provo in those mountains. I think BYU probably gets the win, and the beginning of the end for Clay Helton officially starts.
Last one, Florida 8 at Kentucky.
That one honestly feels like another stay away to me. Reason being, Kentucky, look, backup quarterback is in. I will say this, Kentucky's defense is really good again, at least their pass rushes. I have questions about Florida's line. If you look it up, I think like 4 of the last 5 years, this game has actually been within a touchdown. Historically, these teams have played closer than you think. I would probably take Kentucky in the points at home, Florida to win straight up. But there's just not a lot of information about these teams based on who they played and all that kind of stuff.
Aaron, good spot. Tell people when your podcast drops, and also you're off to, what, a 10-5-1 start picking against the spread.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Steve. The podcast, the Aaron Torres Sports Podcast, every Monday and Thursday. New episode will be out tomorrow. I think I'm 10-5-1 against the spread. I took a brutal beat, Nebraska, Colorado under last week. Not that anyone cares about brutal beats. Everybody takes them. I'll shut up now. But yeah, picks are off to a good start. Yeah, listen, everybody has bad beats. I need to shut up. Yeah. Good start, fun. Love talking college ball. As you guys know, I love talking college hoops as well. So, yeah, I appreciate you guys having me.
All right, Aaron. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Steve.
Aaron Torres, nationally with Fox Sports Radio. He's got his podcast that he does a couple times a week. And everyone's trying their hand at picks. That's a hell of a start, a 10-5-1 start. Adam, do you want to respond to the beginning of the convo about Michigan being lost right now and they don't know who they are?
No, I think that's true. They're trying to figure it out. They're trying to change their identity a little bit. I don't know that the personnel necessarily fits what Harbaugh wants to do. And I also think that they knew the Wisconsin game was the game that they really had to get prepared for. I think they looked at these first two games. Harbaugh has certainly an NFL mentality. I think he was using the first two games as a preseason, trying to get ready. But I also think they are really up against it because Wisconsin, level of competition, I get it, but they have looked unbelievable. And they are up in a big challenge next week.
You like Wisconsin, or are they still one-dimensional? I mean, the one dimension is ridiculous. Yeah. Ridiculous. Johnny Taylor is going to rush for 2,500 yards.
It's like their average score is, what, 60-0 the first two games?
It's ridiculous. You obviously have to see more out of Cone and quarterback, and you're going to get that against Michigan. Jonathan Taylor's obviously going to be the focus. I'll say this, though, about Michigan. You can talk about looking ahead for 2 weeks now to Wisconsin. Shea Patterson has been inaccurate and erratic, and I think that's somewhat worrisome, especially when you're starting to spread it out and putting more on his shoulders.
Yeah, I'll say the fumble thing I'm not that worried about. I mean, like, I think fumbles can – if it's a certain guy fumbling, you know, every single time, whatever, but I think – It's not necessarily indicative that you're going to keep fumbling, that you fumbled a couple times.
Well, to me, it's more sailing balls over the head, throwing them in the dirt, not being accurate, things like that that worry me.
Yeah, for sure.
So I was with John last night on VSiN. He does a late-night show at 10 p.m. And I went over 5 plays in the NFL. I had one short favorite and 4 dogs. I like playing dogs. I like playing overreactions.
Is Stanford getting 8 an overreaction against Central Florida? Or is that the number? Because here's my issue on the other side. So Costello is going to be back at quarterback for Stanford. For Central Florida, I think they have lots of good quarterbacks. I just have no idea who's playing.
Yeah, they've had two different quarterbacks at each start.
And the third one is ready. He's starting to practice now.
Yep.
Dariel Mack is starting to practice. We know Wimbush, the transfer from Notre Dame, is there. They were all mysterious last week. They were playing crap. FAMU last week?
Yeah.
Or it might have been Florida Atlantic, whatever.
Florida A&M was week one.
Okay, yeah. So FAU, they played a freshman from Hawaii last week. He lit it up. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you pick the game if you don't know who's going to be a quarterback for UCF.
Yeah, I think to me, when it comes to UCF, the focus has been the run game. Like, they're averaging nearly, I think it's actually about 300 yards per game. I should know this. I just wrote this game up for our magazine. But
are they going to do that against Stanford?
Well, and that's my question, because to me, you have two extremes for Stanford, right? You have the game against Northwestern, in which Northwestern's offense could not do anything, and you could talk about the quarterback position. They couldn't really run the ball either. And then you have a game against USC, but a lot of that had to do with Slovis. They still did give up 4.9 yards per carry to USC, but they didn't run it that much, so it's too hard to put your finger on, because I think how bad the defense looked but how great it looked week one. So, like, I stayed away, but I think it could be an overreaction just because of how dominant USC looked. To get a number like this for Stanford is pretty tough.
Justin Watkins, Legal Insider, coming up in about 20 minutes. We're going to talk AB and the serious charges lobbed his way. We've got more on this Taco Tuesday thing with LeBron James, which is really picked up. We got an Ariana Grande story to get into. But on the way back, we have to hit this fantasy league that Adam Hill thought he was going to dupe. He set up the whole thing. We knew the guys in the league would be livid, and man, it turned into an absolute, according to Adam, an absolute nuclear situation. The whole thing blew up.
Visit Cofield's Corner on LVSportsNetwork.com for access to the latest podcasts and best interviews.
I'd say Maryland Syracuse would be the one that's seen the most line move. We're all the way up to Maryland -2 right now at home against Syracuse. We opened this Maryland +3.
Yeah, I like Syracuse in that one. That line seems out of whack.
Jackson hands it off to Lee. Back to the edge. Touchdown, Maryland. Jackson on the field.
Going to be changing my opinion too much on Maryland winning that game last week in a blowout fashion.
Maryland dressed for success right now, leading by 29. Davis, touchdown.
Live in Summerlin, it's Cofield and Company from the Rampart Race and Sportsbook.
Just trying to warn you folks, we got a lot of newly minted sports betting experts. Now, we're all going to get picks wrong, believe me. The best any of us can do in a season is probably, 55%. But there are times when I just hear square opinions. Was Kazarian being square there by saying he wasn't going to react to Maryland winning 79-0? Because I bet Maryland as soon as that line came out. I don't think Syracuse is very good. I think Syracuse is overhyped. People aren't or hadn't factored in the difference from Dungy to Tommy DeVito. They're different level quarterbacks. Syracuse has not arrived yet. And just because they've played a couple of tough games against Clemson over the years, including a win, I thought that was the wrong spot for them initially to be favored on the road. Just busting Kazarian's chops there. That was John Murray, who's going to join us in about an hour. It happens, man. It happens. You got to be really careful with knee-jerk reactions.
Doug is very square. If that was the original question. Was he square there? He's always square.
Heard he likes the favorites.
He likes favorites, especially on the road. He likes road favorites because you get the better team and don't have to lay as big of a number.
Wait, is that...
Oh, he has said that to me many times.
That's an exact quote?
Exact quote.
Yikes. I will say this. I don't know if it was a square opinion, but I think to me it's short-sighted to also rule out what Syracuse did against Liberty the week before, in which against a Liberty team who had Hugh Freeze up in a hospital bed... Right. They could barely beat 24-0. And so, like, that's also part of it is it's not just overreacting to what Maryland did. It's watching Syracuse limp through a game against a Liberty team that I don't think is that good. And I used Maryland in the last man standing over at stations because of the, you could take advantage of stale numbers there. But I also think Maryland's pretty good. Now, having said that, I already bent Temple this weekend against Maryland.
8?
Yep.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't have a great read. I thought Maryland would win that game at the time they were a dog. There's also going to be the up-and-down nature of Maryland dealing with success. Mm-hmm. Bottom line is, DJ Durkin may be one of the biggest scumbags in the history of college football, but he was building a pretty decent team. And Loxley, I'm not going to say Loxley is a much cleaner guy, because we know if Loxley, you know, gets mad at one of his assistants, he may just punch him in the face. How do we know that? He's done it.
As you do.
He did it at New Mexico, but I think he can coach. I know he can recruit, and I think he's developing as a coach. We never got to really see him with great talent. I guess if he can recruit, he could have got great talent at New Mexico. I think he's going to get talent at Maryland. All right, real quick, because we'll carry this over into the 4 o'clock hour. You talked about a fantasy league that you were drafting in last week. They had a really bad rules gaffe where they put too many points on return yards. You planned to go into the draft without telling them they had screwed up, and you were going to draft every Tyler Lockett you could and literally pass on guys like Julio Jones early in the draft. And you put together a team with, what, 5 return men?
Yeah, including my starting quarterback, Taysom Hill.
Yeah, starting quarterback, Taysom Hill. Who else is on your team as a quarterback?
Mahomes.
Yeah, Pat Mahomes. So he was actually going to sit Mahomes for Taysom Hill.
Nice.
Right before the season started, the commish realized what had happened, and Armageddon broke out.
Yeah. I drafted my team. I have some regular players, but mostly just kick returners, my entire team. Including, as I said, I had Mahomes, but I took Mahomes in the first round because why not? I'm going to have kick returners that are going to win the league for me, so I don't want anybody else to have Mahomes.
Well, you also didn't want to give it away, right? You were drafting a regular team, and then come like round 4 and 5, it just started the run of kick returners, and no one was really paying attention to why the hell you're drafting. Who was the Erickson guy?
Alex Erickson from the Bengals, who, by the way, would have been the leading scorer in the league this week.
With Sammy Watkins.
Yeah, way over Sammy Watkins.
Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, way over those guys. So, yeah, I had Alex Erickson. Yeah. I had Andre Roberts, who actually got hurt. So he wouldn't have really done me any good. Taysom Hill was a great one because he actually scored on offense in addition to returning. It's great. Well, actually, I don't think Taysom will return this week. So that would have backfired a little bit. But, yeah, I had a bunch of kick returners and punt returners. You know, Ryan Switzer from Pittsburgh.
Right. So you get a call from the commission. He says what?
No call. The night before the opening game, last week, he just went into the settings and changed the settings.
Ooh.
And I was like, whoa.
How'd you notice?
You get a league alert, like, hey, settings have been changed. And I went in and looked, and I was like, no. No. So I jumped into the league message board, and I was like, please reset the settings to what they were at the draft. That's how people drafted their teams. That's it. And then somebody goes, yeah, I didn't know we were going to change the rules. I don't think they understood. But like, yeah, I didn't think we were going to change the rules. You should change them back.
Let's hear in 3 minutes what the commish then started saying about changing the rules, because this thing got really ugly as Adam was – I'm not going to say you tried to dupe them. You absolutely took advantage of their naivete.
Yeah. And by the way, I came here on the show to put it out first, and I was looking for should I do it or not. Everybody seemed in agreement that I should. And then for some reason, after this happened, you were like, why'd you do that? Like, I came to you on the show for advice here. I don't know why you were pretending that you weren't a part of this. I asked Pete in advance.
I'm a bystander, innocent bystander.
I put it out to the city.
4 o'clock hours on the way.
Coming up next, legal analyst Justin Watkins joins Steve in studio to break down the biggest legal stories in the world of sports.